Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio Scan Show, Stop Child Abuse Now, number 2436. NASCA has a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts and showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And second, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I am Linda Vitti, an advocate, counselor, and life coach from New Jersey, and I will be your host for this evening. So we welcome you and encourage you to call in and be part of our panel. The number to call in is 646-595-2118. Again, the number is 646-595-2118. Tonight, our special guest is Mary Ann Petrie from Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, who lost her children to a biased family court system, which eventually led to parental alienation. Once a registered nurse with a happy family, Mary Ann found herself fending off back-to-back accusations of child abuse. She says, "I became a pro se litigant, appealing to the Superior Court with victory that proved life-saving." Her book, Dismantling the Family Court Corruption, Why Taking the Kids Was Not Enough, presents family courts as having become a highly profitable business where fathers and mothers are pawns. And without further ado, I am going to invite her on. Good evening, Mary Ann.
Good morning, good evening, how are you?
Good, very good. We're so excited to have you. It's such an interesting topic that you're bringing up. We don't have a lot on this on the show, and this is just such an interesting take. So I'm very anxious to hear your story. And what we're going to do is we'll do about 10 minutes of you talking about your story, and then we'll go to the panel, and then we'll come back, and that'll be the pattern for the hour and a half.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so I'm just going to let you take it wherever you want to start.
Okay, well, I do want to start at the very beginning. As most stories like this start, it's usually with a first allegation, and these allegations are called silver bullets, and they're used by the opposition to gain advantage over the target parent. And stop me if you don't understand certain words that I'm using. You're welcome to do that. I had a first indication of emotional child abuse on my oldest, who was going to be 17. And the indication was that, well, it was a number of things. One, that there wasn't food in the fridge. which is a common thing kids will say from what the caseworker told us. But she had lied to me, and I was disciplining her for that. And she was also wanting boys up in her room for 2.5 hours to watch movies. And that was a no-go at all in my home. And she did not like the way I was disciplining, so she just picked up and left. And I didn't realize she was really leaving until I went to the school to go get her, and she was not coming out. So I figured she was with her father. And earlier in the day, we had received a call from CPS wanting to come and talk. And I thought, gee, how quickly this moved, because, you know, the night before we were fighting, and then the next day we're getting a call from CPS. So, of course, you run around straightening up the house. And luckily, my husband was laid off at the time. And we watched this individual barrel through our door with a threat stating, if you are indicated with emotional abuse, you're going to lose your job as a registered nurse. And my parents, it was crazy. My parents were there as well, but she did not interview them. My parents took the youngest children to the park or something so we all could talk. And she really didn't interview my husband. She immediately went to talking about financial issues regarding my ex-husband. And I thought, aren't you here to discuss my oldest child and why she left? Why are you talking about financial matters that should not concern you?
Right.
And that included a pension fund. And she was saying, why was I upset I wasn't getting what I thought I should in child support? And I really could care less about the child support. And the pension fund wasn't much to even talk about. It was only worth $2,200. But with an attorney, we had won that in Superior Court. He just never paid it up. But anyway, what had happened was, here I am working in the ER taking care of very sick patients, four of them, and I get a call put through from the secretary, and I pick it up, and here is this caseworker screaming at me. And I said, well, what's this indication? When does all this happen? Because I really didn't understand, was I being indicated or what was going on? And she yelled on the phone at the top of her lungs, when you're indicated, you'll be the first one to know, and you'll be hearing it from me. And I just hung up on her because I was like, you know, I was trying to be shaken but not stirred because I had patients to take care of.
Right, right.
You know, and so I just kept moving about my day, but I had to tell my boss, and therefore I was suspended from the emergency room with no income, no unemployment. And the reason why they wouldn't give you unemployment was because you were indicated. You were guilty until proven innocent. So there's no way you could collect unemployment. And my husband was like, well, okay, I'm going to take some more serious jobs out of town to make up for your income that we've now lost. And so once you were indicated, you've got to go through a CPS hearing or child services hearing and be adjudicated. And I was exonerated. But that took from a period of 6 months to get that all lined up and go before the judge and then get exonerated. So I thought, great, I got exonerated. But in the meantime, about, I don't know, 3 months after that caseworker was screaming at me at work, my ex decided to file an emergency petition to remove the other kids and take custody. And it was very easy for him to do because the attorney that he had was friends with the judge. They both worked in the courthouse in capacity together for years. And we tried to recuse him, and he would not do it. He said, I know this case better than any other judge, and I'm going to run the case. So I could have walked in there with a team from Hollywood and we would have lost, okay? And the horrible thing was when the judge wrote the order, you know, it takes a couple weeks for you to get it in the mail, but when the ex got the order, the same day he ran down to domestic relations and filed child support on me. Now, I don't know if anyone knows all this, but there's the Child Protective Services laws, which means if you're indicated with a charge of any type of abuse, and I was lumped in with all the other abusers, whether it be emotional abuse,
sexual abuse.
So I was not allowed to work if you're going to be around children. So how could you work? And that's really 80% of the 90% of the jobs, right? So he expected close to $1,000 a month in child support that I couldn't pay. So as we roll along, arrears were building up, and I couldn't work. So once I was exonerated of the first indication, 4 days later, I was indicated on another second frivolous fraudulent indication at the taxpayer's expense, which again, I was suspended from my job. So I never really got to walk back into the ER again until I was adjudicated. And that took another, it took another 6 to 7 months just to get to a hearing. And in the meantime, the hospital wanted fingerprints, state police, background check, and child abuse clearances, which I couldn't provide. So I lost my job. And then about 2 weeks later, I had my hearing with the child services judge, who, again, exonerated me. And a month later, we found out I was exonerated, but the hospital would not hire me back because they knew I had a third child. And you're probably wondering what the second indication of emotional child abuse was, and it was that I would not let my child ride his bike around the block, and I would not give him his Xbox. And I don't know how this could be when he was not even in my possession, when the judge had had taken the kids away from me in the wintertime. And how can you ride your bike in the wintertime anyway? None of that made sense.
Right. Yeah, you are. It's just so much, and it just seems overwhelming that they could do so much so quickly without any retribution from you. And so I want to go to the panel. We have about four people on the panel. So let me first go to my co-host, Bailey in Florida. Hi, Bailey.
Hi, how are you? Welcome to our show. So I relate a lot to what you're saying. Unfortunately, my ex-husband, when we were separated, called CPS on me. But one of the stupid things he did was text me exactly what he was going to tell them. So when she came, I handed her my phone. So she knew it was a lie. And I took a drug test willingly. But my issue is that even if it's an anonymous phone call, and this is South Florida, okay? Because it's an anonymous phone call, even if I'm proving to you that it came from my ex, he couldn't be accused for calling falsely. So what you're saying is how broken the system is, and I'm telling you, it is very, very broken. So, CPS, it's a joke, because when it's so necessary, like in your case, where they need to really do the investigation and their job, and I have a girlfriend, I hope she calls in because this show is so perfect for her. When the system is so broken and you have judges in cahoots or getting paid off, it is horrific. And people have to know this is happening all over. I don't know the other countries, but in the United States, up in New York, down in Florida, I forgot where you are from. I'm sorry.
Pennsylvania? I'm from Pennsylvania. Sorry.
Pennsylvania.
Yep.
So every state has a broken system. And I have a lot more to say about this, but I so feel your pain for what you went through. especially with CPS and then the job and all that, because your reputation is ruined no matter what. Even if it gets taken away and you get your kids back or whatever it is, you still have that black mark against you. You know, even if it was lies, what, you're going to steal from the rooftop? So
yeah.
I relate to you in that sense, and it's horrific. I mean, I have a lot more to say, and look, obviously, I'll leave it for later. But it's a truly broken system, and the kids are the ones that are suffering. So,
oh yes,
that's
thanks,
what
Bailey.
I have to say. Thank you,
Bailey.
Yeah, because I think if someone's going to call in a accusation, they should be forced to give their names.
Agreed.
That way that would cut down, from what I understand, it's 70% of unfounded phone calls that CPS, DHFS, DCS, whatever they want to call themselves, are getting. 70% of those calls are unfounded. But these other children that are dying in foster care and CPS is not following up on children that are getting beaten up. Go after those ones. You know, I don't understand.
My girlfriend.
Sorry, Bailey.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I really hope she gets my message and she calls in, but her kids are living in such a horrific situation. And because of the broken system and the paid off of the judge, she doesn't have her kids. They're not following the divorce agreement, nothing. And they are living in a home with, I can't begin to tell you what's going on. I mean, it's insanity, and it's abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And to undo the damage of that abuse, I know from what my kids went through for a short period of time, it's 4.5 years later, we still have that pain. We still are dealing with that pain.
Mm-hmm.
For her, it's 4 years now that she doesn't have her children. And half of them don't, most of them don't talk to her even because they've been so brainwashed. But that's for another time. Hopefully she'll call in. But I've seen it firsthand, and it's horrific.
Oh, thanks,
Bailey.
Go. Okay. Now we're going to go to Marianne in New York. Hi, Marianne.
Hi.
Me?
This is Marianne.
Oh.
Is correct, or is there someone else?
No, it's for you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I've also had my share of experiences with divorce and child issues in the court system. It's a horrible experience. I won't go into my story because tonight's your night, but I certainly understand. So, welcome.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm sorry you went through
thank
all that,
too. Thank you, Mary Ellen. Okay, we're going to go to Darlene in Tennessee, our Southern Belle.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Yep.
I'm with you on the court system being all stood up on I had it rough in the court system both ways, as a child and as an adult after my divorce. But when I was a child, when my parents, the second time for custody battle, the court system went ahead, even though I was abused horrifically at home by dad, I still had a roof over my head, you know. I still had food to eat and stuff. But my mother, you know, she didn't even provide food. She didn't provide us to let us sleep in the house. She tried to get me to prostitute myself out and everything. And the court system knew that my stepdad, that, you know, that they gave custody to, was still on probation for murder.
Mm.
So that's how scary the system is. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
The cops would even come to me when I was married, and they said, if you leave him, you better not take the kids with you because I'll file get you for kidnapping. We never had a court thing that said he had full custody or anything like that, but the cops stopped by just to threaten me. So he had tie-ins with the government, you know, with the local government thing. So I know what you mean by your spouse having, your ex-spouse having that tie-in where he could get the things done quicker and get it, you know, against you. And it does mess with your life and affect it terribly.
Thanks, Darlene.
It does. Thank you.
Okay, Ekaterina in Canada. Hi, Dom. Ekaterina, are you there? Hello? Ekaterina? Okay, I guess she's away from her mic. So, Marianne, I'm going to let you finish where you were, take off where you left off.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if this will help because when you mentioned Canada, I didn't know if I had told you, but I had gotten actually a Canadian film producer got in touch with me wanting to make a film of this book to show society what goes on in these courtrooms. And his name is James Russell of Manx Motion Picture Studios Incorporated up in Canada. And so he's working on that, on a screenplay.
That's awesome.
And I hope I hope it will help. Remember that movie Aaron Brockovich, and then everyone got concerned over the drinking one? So maybe, hopefully, this film will be made. Hopefully, you know, one of our directors will pick it up and run with it as well with him. And this will be shown. And because no one understands it unless they go through it.
Right, exactly.
And
exactly.
That's the hard part when people say, well, what happened to your kids? What happened? And it's like you're telling them the story and they're like, they don't get it until it happens to them. And I wouldn't wish this on anyone. Because what had gone on is it just like spiraled downward. And because the ex expected practically $1,000 a month. And everything was racking up to about $15,000 to $18,000 in arrears. And then what had started was contempt hearings, support contempt hearings, they call them. I eluded jail about 3 times, which was pretty good. But Holy Week came around, and I went before Judge Spear. I was in a box of with about, I don't know, 14, 15 guys, and 2 of them were shackled at the wrists and at the ankles. And I'm thinking, what the heck? And the guy next to me said, I don't even know why I'm here. I've already paid up my child support. I'm thinking, I don't know, we got a crazy judge here. And the thing was, because I had been going to a counselor with all this job stress from this, and I've been before this judge before, and my counselor even said, I think this judge has a vendetta on you. This is personal. Even the opposing attorney he's got a thing with you. Like, this is personal. And I'm thinking, I think she's right. Because here it is Holy Week, and she called me first. Well, she called me first, but prior to her coming out, I'm so sorry, prior to her coming out, my ex and his attorney showed up, and he even brought along his parents. And the bailiff was there, and he walked over to his attorney and said, what are you doing here? And I kind of like how he said that. But his attorney just leaned over on his elbow and just put his hand on his chin and said, we're just here to observe. I'm thinking, yeah, right, it's Holy Week, isn't it? Oh, just like watching Jesus get shackled. I think that's what you guys are waiting for. So when the judge came out, Marguerite Spear, she said, you know, if you can come up with $2,000, I won't put you in jail. You have 1 month to come up with $2,000 or you're going to go to the sheriff's office at 11 o'clock and sign yourself into jail. And I thought, well, I can get this $2,000 because, you know, the ex never paid up that pension fund, right? So I thought I could get this money. Went to a magistrate? No, because, see, his attorney came to see the magistrate, went down the hall, and I should have followed him. You know, I should have followed him and wondered where he was going. And at this point, I was representing myself. But apparently, he probably had some words with the magistrate, is what I'm guessing. Because when we went in there, he just rolled for the opposing attorney, and that's how it's always been. So the day after Mother's Day, I checked into the sheriff's office at 11 o'clock. And during this time as well, which is written in my book, is that I had been on an antidepressant and anti-anxiety medication, because when you're hauled through family court multiple times and you've gone through support contempt hearings, support conferences, I mean, it's going to take a toll on you. And the anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder caused by the legal abuse is absolutely disgusting, if not degrading. But I went in there and got in the paddy wagon, and there were more guys. I was the only woman there, and there's probably about five guys on the other side, and they have a metal divider. And I had taken some extra medication because I heard they don't give you your medication in prison. And I was worried about going into withdrawals. That was probably one of the least of my worries, maybe. But I had talked to the nurse when I got there, and I said, I'm supposed to have these medications. I can't, you don't go cold turkey off of these, you know, anti-anxiety and antidepressant medications. Well, you won't probably be getting anything for like about 4 days, 5 days. I said, I'm going to go into withdrawals. I don't know what this is going to be like. You know, but, you know, they called everyone up for medication, and I went up thinking I was going to get my medication, and here it is, a human rights violation. And I said, look, I need this medication. And the guard, the female guard there, was very cocky and nasty. And she goes, they all want that medication. And I'm thinking,
oh, God.
You know what? It's like, here, you 22-year-old with your criminal justice degree or whatever you think you have, you know, it's like, I'm a registered nurse. I was always compassionate towards my patients, even if they were med seeking, I was always kind to my patients. And then you come into this environment and you're thinking, I didn't even do anything wrong to get in here. All of this was based on lies. And then the other night happened where I was having chest pain, shortness of breath, and back pain. And I had been a cardiac nurse for 10 years. I'm going, oh, no, I don't want to die in here. But I went to the nurse and I said, you know, can you call an ambulance? Because I need an EKG done. I think I'm having symptoms of a heart attack. Same guard. We don't do that here. And I just went... I went back to my cell and I said, dear God, don't let me die in here. Don't let me die in here. And then the next day, again, you know, I was going into withdrawals, and I just, not to be gross, but I just vomited everywhere. It just came out of nowhere. I just vomited everywhere because they thought, well, to help me, to give me Valium and to give me Pepto-Bismol for nausea, really? So all that came up. And we were all in the – I was with the general population where my ex was telling my kids that I would be playing tennis and knitting like, you know, Martha Stewart or, you know, the Wolf of Wall Street, and that was not the case. I was in with the general population. So as I was, you know, vomiting everywhere, I started crawling to my cell, and the inmates were so nice. They were yelling to the guards, will you please let her in? Let her in. She's sick, you know, and they were so nice. And, you know, the guard, you know, was watching me throw up, and she found the Valium on the floor, and she yelled to the mentors, I found the Valium. And I just looked at her and I said, you do know I'm not a heroin addict. It's like, you know, she goes, I know, I understand. And they became a little bit more compassionate. And they did let me, you know, take a shower and get cleaned up. And they gave me new scrubs to wear. And then I just was getting sicker. And, you know, they would be calling you out to eat. And I was on a liquid diet. And I literally felt like I was sinking into my whatever mattress they call it in prison. It's not a jail. The judge says she's sending you to jail, but it's actually prison. It says prison on the door. So I called my dad and I said, get me out of here. I'm coming out in a body bag. He said, what do I do? I said, can you pay the purge amount of $2,000? So I told him what to do. And the next day at 11 o'clock, they announced I could leave, and those nice inmates were clapping and cheering for me that
wow.
I was able to leave. They were so nice, and because you know the sad part was when they took the kids away, my ex brought his entourage of his parents and his wife, who worked in the courthouse, so that was a big help, and she brought her family. So when you walk in there with a big entourage, whereas it was just me and my parents, it just doesn't look good in front of the judge. So when he ruled to take the kids away, they all jumped up laughing, clapping, whooping, and cheering, and he did not even slam his gavel down and say, order in my courtroom.
Wow.
Somehow I put this on Facebook. I made a comment of this on Facebook, and a female attorney, I can't remember who she was, but she said, whenever a child is taken away under any circumstances, it's never a laughing matter. Surely there were lies told in that courtroom. I said, there were. There literally were.
Right.
And most of them from the caseworker. And the psychologist told some, you know, some things that were kind of blown out of proportion. And
right,
then
right.
You know how it is. I mean, you just get everybody
right.
on
we're
the
gonna,
stand, and it's a free for all.
Right. We're gonna take a break now, and we're gonna go back to the panel. It's been about 15 minutes. So, you know what you have gone through is so traumatic. We talk about childhood trauma a lot on the show, but what you have gone through with your children is extremely traumatic. So, I mean, everything you're talking about. So let me go to Bailey in Florida, my co-host.
You can come back to me. I'm writing down my questions. That's William from Alabama, if you want
to. Okay, I will come back to you.
Thank you.
I'll get back to you at the end of the round. Okay, we'll go to Mary Ellen in New York. Mary Ellen.
Hi. I'm hoping you had a positive ending to your story, or maybe you're still in the middle of it. I know it's a fight.
Yeah, I'm kind of still in the middle, but it does have a positive ending. Something positive did come out of it.
I'm glad to hear that. It's amazing how you have to fight so hard to keep your rights and in the middle of trying to protect your children, let alone have what's wrong done.
Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of people give up, you know. They give up. So I'm proud of you fighting.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I think it would be easy to give up because you're up against so much. And the thing is, if you want to, even if you lose, just stay in the fight because that just aggravates them more. So just stay in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the outcome is going to be going to prison, just stay in the fight just to irritate them.
Well, draws
that
open problem.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was that?
I said yes. Keep drawing focus to the problem.
Right. Right.
Make people aware of it.
And it helps to represent yourself. I mean, I ran out of money, so I had to represent myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they hated that even more. I mean, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
You're a fighter. You're definitely a fighter. So thank you, Mary Ellen. And now we'll go to Darlene in Tennessee.
Hello. You're doing a fabulous job.
Thank you.
So, that will be very interesting. We'll see how, you know, the movie for it to be out, because I told Bill to be here. I mean, we need to be here. He's supposed to be here now. So that because he knows a lot about law. So I was hoping that he showed that he didn't finally sign in, you know.
He did, Darlene.
Because
we're going to get to him next.
Okay, that's good. All right, well, I'll go so that you get the rest of them time to talk.
Okay, thanks, Darlene. Okay, we'll go to William in Alabama. Hi, William. Are you there? Hello, William? Okay, I guess he's not answering. Oh, there you are. Okay, go ahead.
Are you there?
Yep.
Turn up my volume, maybe. Take my speakers down or something. Oh, okay, you got you now. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of problems in the court systems and the things that she was talking about. I've experienced some of that myself, and there's a lot of things that it's all about attorneys, money, and power. And sometimes it's about the power of the state versus the power of the individuals and family. And I don't know how far she's gotten into that, but I work on the fringes of some of that because of being a legal assistant. I worked with court-appointed special advocates and some others. So I've ran into some of that stuff. Which, unbelievable on some of the stuff and the way they rule on some of these cases. Which I'm sure she could probably tell you more in her story about this stuff. I'm very familiar with some of the things that happen as far as court systems go.
Yes, it's terrible. It is terrible. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, William. Okay, we'll go back to Bailey in Florida.
Hi. Boy, I could relate to so much of what you're saying. It's creepy. But, you know, I'm a big advocate for domestic violence and for the fact that children that witness abuse, it's as if they've been abused. So I'm always, you know, screaming about that. But when you and your spouse are using children as a pawn. Partner is using the children as a pawn. Again, the damage that is done to those kids can be irreversible. I mean, it can get better, but the trauma is horrific. The PTSD is horrific. I mean, just from my experience as to what you were talking about, I've been to prison. I could relate to everything you're saying. I only spent a few hours, and my ex bailed me out because he didn't mean for me to get arrested, but that's for my book. From what I understand, even attorneys want to get the whole show over. Even your own attorney sometimes wants to get the whole show over. They just want it done. They don't care. Nobody cares about the kids. And, you know, one of the things that I wish would happen would be that they would have a profiler psychologist in the courtroom, because there's nobody else that is going to be able to see who's playing who, who's the abuser, who's the victim. Because judges are not trained, attorneys are not trained, a lot of therapists are not trained. You need a specific psychologist, a profiler. You need somebody there for the kids that knows the system. Otherwise,
well, that's why they have CASA now.
What?
That's why they have CASA now. They have CASA. They have special advocates for the children that sit in the courtroom
and represent
the children.
Right. I've heard of that. But a lot of times they get swayed to one side or the other. Like if in my situation, my ex is a charmer. He could charm the pants off of you. And it's horrific when you watch a victim being made into the villain and the abuser gets away with it. I happen to have been so lucky that I got my ex locked up and the new judge came out. My story ended in that sense. It ended good. What goes around comes around. The damage is still done. All the other stuff is still doesn't go away. It's a work in progress for years and years and years. But 100%, this has to end. You know, I'm constantly advocating for domestic violence, domestic abuse. This is child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's child abuse. Because who is getting hurt in the end? It's the kids.
Right.
They're suffering. They're being torn between back and forth. So that's my point right now. Thanks,
Bailey. Okay, we're going to let Marianne get back. I'm curious to see how this ends on a positive note, because you have been through so much already.
Oh, why, thank you. Well, when my dad bailed me out, you know, I kind of crawled in the back seat and I said, take me to McDonald's, because it's like I needed actual food that smelled good. Because when they're giving you two hot dogs on top of oatmeal and calling that a meal, that's just, who wouldn't throw up? So, you know, he said to me, my father was 79 at the time. And he said, are we going to be doing this every 4 months? I said, yeah, about every 3 to 4 months, this judge is going to haul me in here and want the money. And we're going to have to feed him whatever he wants. And it's terrible because we had been 50-50 for 10 years. We were co-parenting very well until the third party entered the picture. Unfortunately, I was the one playing matchmaker, thinking I could hook him up with a nice friend to date, maybe get some dating experience. I didn't think he'd marry her within 7 months. I wasn't counting on that. I was not sure if she worked in the courthouse or if was I clear on that. But when she said to me on the phone, I know a lot of people in the courthouse and I'm friends with all the judges. And then she said it to me couple months later on my front porch with my ex, and I'm thinking, what does this mean? I had no idea, but I did bring that up in the custody hearing. Now, as I said, in the meantime, you know, I had the second indication that caused me to lose my job, and I want to tell you how my child reacted to the caseworker. Was he said, I have no problems with my mother. I don't want to talk about this. I have nothing to say. And when she was being interviewed by the child services judge, even she said, she looked down at her fingers and she said, we all knew this was, you know, a big custody case and there, you know, were attorneys involved. And the father kept calling the office for up between the mother and the son. And I thought, okay, so he's been constantly calling the child services or CPS office. So this has been going on for a long time now. And so I mean, as time went on and I'm going through these horrible support contempt hearings, after coming out of prison, 5 months later, I had a heart attack. And
oh, goodness.
I thought I was in pretty good shape, you know, and I really didn't think I was. And nurses always say, oh, no, it's not me. It's not happening to me. And my husband was out of town, and he said, go call the ambulance. And the chest pain got worse. It would not go away. And the thing is, it started on the right side and moved into the left side, and it just stayed there. It was crushing. It was horrible. And the doctor even thought, no, it can't be. Your cholesterols are perfect. We can see that. And as soon as he got in there and did a heart cath, they had to put 3 stents into the LAD, and they were shocked that they had to do that. And so that was in the fall, and by that time I had appealed to Superior Court because I had to fight this child support order that this judge came up with this figure while she was inflating my child support order. Get this. She inflated it. She inflated my arrears by $3,000. For some reason, she just felt she could do that. Apparently, these judges can do whatever they want. And then, I was going to say something, and then it kind of just flew past me.
That's okay.
Then, I hate when that happens, but so she did that.
You're talking about the judge inflated the amount, and you went to Superior Court to get that reduced.
Yeah, so, and we had to wait and wait. And, of course, that could take 8 months. But luckily it didn't. And I was, you know, I wanted to go down there and argue in front of the 3 judges. And we got letters saying, nope, they don't want to hear from any attorneys. They're just going to read briefs. There's too many of them. I'm thinking, oh, no. But then I thought, God wants me to shut up. He must want me to shut up. So I just waited patiently. And I'm like, okay. So after my heart attack, I had to take it easy, and I was still having chest pain. And 2 days after Christmas, my husband brought me an envelope. He said, this is from the Superior Court. I thought, oh man, I don't know. You know, but I had this weird feeling when I opened up the envelope, and it said, vacate and remand. I said, oh my God, we won, but... And my husband said, what do you mean we won, but? I said, well, when it says vacate, had it just said vacate, that would have wiped away all the arrears and all the child support. It would have ended it. But no, they wrote remand, which meant it had to go back down to the lower court and go back down to Marguerite Speer. Yeah, and we had to go through all this all over again. But I did say to my husband, I said, since we won, we do have a lot to celebrate because this is a big win. It really is.
Right.
So I said, could you hold my hand while I jump on the couch like Tom Cruise did on the Oprah show? And so he did because my balance wasn't good, on, you know, after having a heart attack and on more medication, you know, I said, that felt darn good. Now I know what Tom Cruise felt like. Okay. So then my counselor, I went to see her and I said, you know, what do I do? I don't know if I can go in there after having a heart attack with this judge being so vile. And so she said, well, I was just talking to a client and they found a Supreme Court attorney that is not within the city. She's from a different city. So I got her name and I went in to see her, and she cost just as much as anybody else, but it had to be done because I could not physically do it. And she was so nice. As soon as she walked in, she was laughing, and she said, man, that judge is pissed off. I'm telling you right now, she is pissed. And I said, oh, really? She said, well, you beat her. And so she said, none of this should have happened to you. She said, I wish I would have known you a year and a half ago because you should never have been even, with these charges and the indications from CPS, none of this should have happened. The child support should never have happened, and you should never have gone to prison. I said, well, now what do we do? She said, well, we're going to go back in to court, and we're going to get this sorted out. My goal, she said, her goal was to just wash everything away. She said she'd like to see that happen, but she, you know, does not know how this judge is going to rule. So
right.
In the meantime, I like I said, I was having continued chest pain, so the cardiologist wanted to go back in. And he found nothing, thank God. But, I should tell you this story. Prior to actually winning, before I won, or found out that
let me stop you. No, go ahead. Finish that story, and then we're going to go to the panel one more time. But tell this story.
Okay.
First.
Oh, get this. You'll love this. Because right after my heart attack, about a week and a half later, I had to go to another support contempt hearing. And Judge Spear said, because I had presented her with all the cardiologist's info that I had this heart attack, apparently she did not believe I had a heart attack. She did not even, I don't know what her problem was, but she hands me a physician verification form and said, "Now you go give this to your family doctor, fill it out and have it to me within 7 days. And this is the only thing that's keeping you out of jail today." And I'm thinking to myself, wasn't the cardiologist's okay. notes good enough for you?
Unbelievable. Okay.
I know. So what I did was I ran to my family doctor the same day, and he knew what was going on. And so I filled it out, and I took it to her office, her chambers, and I gave it to her secretary the next day. And then, of course, I found out on the 2 days after Christmas that we had won. And then I jumped on the couch, and I was happy. But but we can go to your panel. I'm sorry.
Is that how it ends? Is that the ending?
Oh, no, no.
Okay, all right. We'll go to the panel one more time, and then we'll have about a half hour left. Okay, first
okay, gotcha.
We'll go to Mary Ellen in New York. You've been on hold for 15 minutes, so go ahead.
Yeah, I have really nothing to say. I'd like to just hear the story. So, sounds like you do so much, and I'll just keep listening. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks, Mary Ellen. Okay, Darlene in Tennessee.
Wow, I'm enjoying listening to your voice because I can picture all this stuff happening. I could even put myself there as jumping up and down on the couch and everything, you know. I'm like, wow. Very nice. I'm sorry you had to endure this, though, you know. But,
oh, thank you.
But you are good, very good at telling.
Oh, thank you.
Talking
yep.
about it and everything. Yep. You're great.
Thanks, Darlene. Okay, William in Alabama. William, are you there? William? Hello? Okay, William, we'll come back to you. Okay, Maya in Florida. Maya?
Hello?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. I'm just listening.
Okay. All right. Well, let's listen. Thank you, Maya, for calling in.
My first time here, okay. So.
Okay. Well, we're so glad you came.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll let you listen. Okay. Bailey in Florida.
That Maya's my friend and also went through a hell. I'm still going through a hell, so she relates to probably a lot of this too. Fortunately, I have so many girlfriends that have been through such horrific divorces and fighting over the kids and all the it's just so there has to be a better system. Changes have to be made. We're destroying another cycle of innocent children, of another the next generation of is they're being destroyed by bad people. I mean, it's like, you know, when you go into it, you're in that fight mode, in that like flight or fight, you know, mode. where you just you do everything you have to get what you need and get what you know what get justice after the fact. And when you hear somebody else telling their story and it's so similar to yours, it's like, you know, the empathy that I have for you, and I know Maya and some of the others here who have experienced even a tiny bit of what you went through, is tremendous. I missed one thing that you said, that there was someone that helped you. Was that an advocate that helped you in court?
Well, it was a legal friend. He was a friend of the family, kind of guiding me on paperwork.
I was very lucky. I got a police department advocate. Now, there are very few of them, especially in South Florida. They're advocates, not from the court, but from the police department. And she helped tremendous in my case. She helped me also with filing documents and stuff like that. So there is help out there. There are free legal associations. I forgot what it's called down here. There's one in South Florida. It's some religious organization. Something with the church. I don't remember exactly what it's called, but they have free legal aid, and they have a woman who helped file a restraining order, and she helped me do it to the dot, where if you file it yourself, it's not the same. So I ended up getting a permanent one with her help. So, you know, there is so much help out there. You have to look for it. And I had to look for it. And I was lucky. Mm-hmm. I went through a lot of horrific stuff, similar to what you went through. Like, you had your friend that helped you in the end. I found people, organizations and people that, but again, like I said, the system is horrific. And I hope that your movie, your screenplay gets out there, because the more of those stories that are out there in such a big way, the more people are going to see what's really going on behind closed doors. You know, domestic violence, all this kind of stuff is hush-hush and behind the scenes. And we need it to come out, because we're destroying innocent kids. I relate to everything. A lot of what you're saying, I empathize tremendous, and I hope that there's a happy ending. Thank you.
We want to hear that ending. Thanks, Bill.
Okay.
Let's get to that ending.
Okay, let's do it. Okay. Left. Okay. So, well, it happened on a wintry snowstorm. Just figures, right? When my new attorney had to drive practically 2 hours in a snowstorm to get to the courthouse to argue in front of Judge Marguerite Speer. And it was great when she got there, because she laid down the law and the judge would not look at any of us. She just continued to look down. And the judge had said something, and my attorney said, "Your Honor, you have to abide by what Superior Court ruled." And I almost died when she said that, because it's like, wow, you totally hammered that one. And then every time the opposing attorney would open his mouth, the judge would say, "Overruled, overruled." And everything my attorney said was sustained, sustained. And I'm like, well, this is how it should go. This is how it should go. Come on, people. And so at the end, my attorney said, "Your Honor, we need to see the ex-husband's W-2. And then the judge said, and she's kind of a chirper, she goes, "You two get up here." So the opposing attorney and my attorney went up, and because we were standing at some railing, I don't know how all courthouses work, but we were standing at a railing, and the bailiff got me a chair to sit in. And they were talking for about 10, 15 minutes, and his attorney finally said to the ex, bring me your W-2, and he had to hand it over. And then they looked at it, and my attorney came back to me, and she said, he's making a lot of money. And it's like, oh, that's great. So taking the kids wasn't enough. He didn't need my money. I mean, it's bad enough you took my kids away from me, but did you really have to put me through all of this as well? But what happened, the judge's order came back, and my attorney called me. She said, this is the craziest order I've ever seen written. It's just absolutely crazy. It's convoluted. Like, it didn't really make sense. But what she did was she took the $1,000 and reduced it to $106 a month. And then, of course, they tack on the arrears, which she said would be, I think, $10 a month. And then she reduced those inflated arrears from $15,000 down to $11,000, which I thought was very gracious of her, don't you think? And but again, there was that pension fund that was never dealt with. And we had to go back in court, and my attorney had to fight for that, and told the another judge that, you know, we never got this pension fund. It was won in Superior Court, and it was never, you know, it just never came down the pike. And what the ex was trying to do was tack that onto the arrears, and so was his attorney. And so the judge said, well, you know, the previous judge who handled this had passed away. And prior to that happening, he just never signed the order off to domestic relations to have that money taken off the arrears. So my attorney got that order from that new judge and walked it down to domestic relations to make sure it was taken off the arrears, which then brought that down to $8,000. So as it turned out, he never got what he wanted. So the success story of this is I won this Superior Court case on child support, which is horrendous and very difficult to do. And I showed them, he never got the money he ever thought he would get out of me ever. He never got it. And his wife was not allowed to go into any further courtrooms because I had filed a complaint to the DA, and he told me to notify her boss that she stated, I know a lot of people in the courthouse and I'm friends with all the judges, and I had done that, and she had gotten in trouble at work. So therefore, she was then not allowed to enter any of the courtrooms. And then with the horrible thing, like with the brainwashing and the emotional child abuse, because parental alienation is emotional child abuse. Psychological child abuse. And so when I got my child, you know, that the judge had also given me the kids every other weekend. He would not give us 50-50. And I was with an attorney at that time, and she said, well, how come, why won't you give us 50-50? There's nothing going on here. There's nothing wrong here. He said, I have my reasons. She said, well, what are your reasons, Your Honor? I have my reasons. And I don't know if he was being a chauvinist. I don't know what his – of course, there was collusion there. But that was probably, you know, at least I got to see the kids every other weekend. But that gave the alienator more of a chance to work on the kids.
Sure, sure.
So actually, the oldest one, really, I really haven't spoken to since, I don't know, it's been 6 years. And the other one is kind of wishy-washy. I mean, he ghosts in and out of my life. And the younger ones, you know, I get to see them every other weekend, but they're aging out. So they're going to be on their own soon. So I really just am talking to parents and trying to lift up their spirits and counsel them. I tell them I'm not a counselor, but I can tell you, you know, there's many Facebook groups that can help you on opposing family court, CPS, you know, groups on Facebook. There's even a group called Bad Judges on Facebook. There's also, yeah, there's a lot of good ones there. There's Humanly Possible with Dawn Andrea McCarty. She's excellent. So there's like a lot of people to talk to. And I feel also I've got the other caller had talked about having someone in the courtroom and watching. And I had been saying I would like to see video cameras in the courtrooms. I would like one on the judge and one on the witness stand and two facing the pews, and then have maybe a panel of one or two individuals going over the cases while this is happening, so they can see how this judge is ruling. And if it just looks inappropriate, like with the collusion and the bias, in my case, they could say, wait a minute, this judge has to recuse himself. There's something going on here. And I don't think a judge should listen to a CPS caseworker. They're not trained in parental alienation. They're not trained in the tactics and the warfare of parental alienation. And like I said, with my case, it was all one-sided. All her information was gathered by the ex and that side of that family. So
right.
That's not appropriate. And once a judge hears stuff, there should be cues that if a judge hears something like that, no, something's not right, no. And things should just be done over. And these kids are being put through the mill. And they were even, okay, like when my kids were interviewed, they were telling the judge what they wanted. They wanted to go back. The judge twisted what my son had said along with the opposing attorney to fit their best interest. Because, you know, they have to have a non-custodial parent. That person has to pay child support and the Title IV funding. The state has to have their incentive money.
Oh, man.
And so there's a lot wrong with this court system. And I feel and I think CPS's time is coming. From what I'm watching on Facebook, it looks like their days are coming to an end. I really feel that they're going to be abolished at some point. I was listening to John Gentry speak of Tennessee. He's running for the Senate in Tennessee. And abolishing CPS probably would be a good idea because they really don't do their jobs right to begin with, in my opinion.
I just want to interject. I when I first got out of college, I got a job at CPS for a short period of time as a crisis worker. I only had my bachelor's degree. I had no experience in counseling. I had minimal training when I went into the job. So
right.
I just wanted to interject that. Continue.
Oh, yeah. No, that's okay. Because, I mean, these people, they're not paid well. And a lot
right.
of them, you know, they know to go after that incentive. They get trained. If they're there long enough, they figure out, and then they get, you know, they know to go after the state incentive for foster care. We have got to defund the Title IV-E, the Title IV-D, and the Title IV-B, and just get rid of all of them. That way, maybe they wouldn't be fighting over children so much. There was a film that came out called Erasing Family. And they talked about Sweden's model of divorce, where the two people sit down and they draw up their own agreement. Like, I'll pay for Johnny's whatever, and you pay for Johnny's school clothes or whatever. We'll work this out together. And it's a 50-50. And they said, well, you know, the kids are being bounced back and forth from house to house, which mine were too. But the kids in Sweden, and they did interview them, and they said, well, you know, it's tough packing and taking our clothes back and forth, but at least we get to see both our parents, and that makes us happy. Isn't that what it's about? You know, they're only kids once. You're only a child once. You should have as much happiness as you can as a child.
Absolutely.
And my kids were happy once until the third party entered the picture, and then anxiety came into the house, and I saw my kids falling apart. I got a call from a woman at school that said, "How come your kids aren't smiling anymore?" And I thought, "Well, I'd like to tell you, but I don't know how much I can tell you because we got this court thing going on, But once and the thing that's bad with being a non-custodial parent is once that parent who has custody, the first thing they do is they get their paperwork and they take it right to school and they start painting the non-custodial parent as evil and they've done something wrong to have their children removed. And
right.
Like the other caller said that, they're sweet as pie and they come across very the narcissistic personality disorder, And so then the school obviously takes that court order and whatever that parent says, and that's the gospel truth. And really the non-custodial parent has no rights. So that means if Johnny breaks his leg in gym or his arm, you're the last to know.
Right.
Unless you know someone in the school system that's going to call you and say, "Hey, just so you know, your kid's going to the ER." But it's a sad fact. But the good thing is I'm not going back into prison every 5 minutes, and got that judge off my back. So it did have a happy ending. It wasn't perfect, but it could have been far worse.
Tell us a little about your book.
Basically
your experience?
Well, it's not only it does have my experience in it, but I felt I was doing, it was grueling. I felt I was doing a psychological dissertation because I was quoting Dr. Childress.
Yes.
I was quoting Dr. Roseman. I was also Ed Crook, journalists, and their talks of parental alienation and what the family court system does to the families. And not only does it affect one generation, Dr. Roseman said it affects 6 generations to come down the pike.
Wow.
Which is, frightening. So I quoted a lot of people to help it be like a manual for people to learn from when they're going through family court and to understand the mechanisms of parental alienation when things come out of your child's mouth that are more adult-like, and to not brush them off or say, it's their hormones, they're growing, because things came out of my child's mouth that I thought, maybe they heard that from school, but actually it was coming from the stepmother's mouth is what was happening. And I want to say there are good stepmothers out there. I know a lot of good stepmothers that don't involve themselves and they want the good of the family.
Sure.
But there are other ones that don't. And those are the ones that are the destroyers completely.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I had a question for you. No, I had a question. You said in your thing that it's a highly profitable business.
Yes.
The courtroom. And, I have clients that are going through this, and I was very taken back that they were ordered, each party, which make minimal amount of money, were ordered $200 a week each to have to pay a co-parenting counselor, which is $800 a month for each parent just for co-parenting counseling, and it's only 40 minutes a week.
Right. Yeah, like mine, ours was cheaper. Yes. Oh, yeah. I don't know why they do that, because it's like, because I was seeing my own counselor, I had to pay out of pocket for that co-parent counselor, which was like nuts, because she had both of us in that room, and he decided to end the counseling sessions, which that co-parent counselor should have called the judge and said, "Look, he bailed out. He does not want to continue with the co-parent counseling." And then that would have alerted, if the judge was smart enough, would say, "He must be the alienator. He does not want to cooperate with this order.
Exactly.
He will cooperate with the visitations." But no. Again, my case was different in the way that the collusion was with the opposing attorney and the judge. But these judges
right.
have got to wake up and take the cases slower, a little bit more seriously, and look closer for signs of emotional child psychological
right.
abuse.
And
because
alienation, absolutely.
See, and the thing I've heard it said that the judges don't want to hear the words parental alienation. So when you go into court, you have to show evidence and not come out and say it's parental alienation. You have to say, well, Johnny is having stomach ulcers. We've been to the doctors on these dates. Here
are
the,
hard is that to
you know,
prove? Right? How hard is that to prove?
Right, exactly. That's the problem. And
you know, we have to stop here, and I have to go to the panel one more time because we're almost out of time, but I'm going to give you the last couple of minutes to say whatever you want to say. Let's go first to Darlene in Tennessee. We're going to ask that you guys talk, you know, just say your final goodbyes or final comments. Okay, Darlene.
You did a fantastic job, and I enjoyed listening to you. Your voice does sound a lot like, what is her name? One of our Joe called. Her voice does sound a lot like her. So
oh, yeah. Joe's got a soothing voice.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Darlene. Okay, Maya in Florida. Did you want to say anything, Maya?
Yes, I missed the beginning. I was just wondering why you were arrested and why was he awarded the children? Because I missed all of that.
Okay, I can tell you real quick. The judge and the opposing attorney were in collusion together. So they concocted, along with the caseworker, stating that I was mentally unstable. And I don't know how a nurse of 23 years goes crazy overnight. Doesn't happen. So they
without any
story.
Evidence?
Without really,
nothing
no.
To back it up?
Nothing to back it up. I did have a psychological evaluation done that was pristine, but that still was not good enough.
Wow.
And even though I was exonerated of the emotional abuse indication on the first child, the judge didn't care. He didn't care what the adjudicating judge for child services ruled. He still believed I was an emotional abuse.
What warranted
abuse.
An arrest? Why arrest you for?
They didn't call it an arrest. It was either you pay the $2,000 or you just go to the sheriff's office. And if you don't, we'll enter a bench warrant, and that would be at 5 p.m. They would do that. But the judge at taxpayer's expense.
What is the crime? What's the crime? What crime?
Nonsense. It was not. I couldn't pay the child support.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, because of the Child Protective Services laws, you can't work.
I see.
So how can you pay
okay.
child support? Yeah, yeah.
Vicious cycle. Okay, now I understand.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Maya.
Narcissist can manipulate.
Oh, I'm sorry. Rip.
Narcissists and sociopaths are masterminds in the courtroom.
Oh, they
That's
are.
That's it.
Yes, they are. You're right.
Yes.
Okay,
carry
we're
on.
Go to Darlene. Okay, Darlene, final comment. Oh, Darlene hung up. Leah, do you have any comments?
Oh, my goodness. I have so many. But I'm so late. I missed so much of it. But the tail end I caught, thank God. And I'm grateful because I 1,000%, I didn't catch your name, but I, the guest speaker, but I completely can feel your pain, your situation, how difficult that must have been and continues to be challenging. I don't know everything, but I can relate 100%. This is my situation, and mine is ongoing. and they're coming after me now for child support. And it was just thrown out, thank God, because I guess the courts looked at it and it made no sense, and I don't make enough, and they keep the children from me like something doesn't add up because they're lying and they're coming after me with other things, which negate that. So they just threw out the child support, coming after me for that. But I'm dealing with many other things, so I'm still going to court. I'll be going next week.
I'm sorry.
I have exactly that with the stepmother. She's toxic, and she's out to destroy me, and she's harming my children, and it's a very sick situation. I can completely relate.
Oh, I'm so sorry you're going through that.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. Well, yeah,
it does feel good to get this.
Oh, sorry.
Oh,
I'm so sorry. I'm having trouble with the microphone here tonight, so I apologize. Leah, I apologize. I cut you off.
You didn't cut me off because there's other people.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay, you. Roberta, you're up. Final comments.
Oh, this is Roberta from Texas. I didn't get into the end of it, but anyway, I just wanted to check in, but hopefully tomorrow night I'll be able to check in at an earlier time. But anyway, I'm just glad y'all are here, and I heard some of it, and I know that sometimes we have to depend on people that we don't want to, and sometimes, and they make the decisions that they ought not to, but you know, because I experienced that, but I believe that somehow or another, you know, if you just pray and help, you know, and just really, because I mean, I do believe that our Creator, you know, heals injustices, you know.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Eventually.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Roberta. Okay, final comments,
thank you.
Bailey.
First of all, Leah and Maya, thanks for calling. They're my two good friends, and we all get each other because we've all walked in each other's shoes in some way or another. And same with Marianne. So basically, I would say we can all relate to each other. We all empathize with each other. And how many more people out there are walking these shoes? How many have just given up? It's the more we talk about it, the more we scream about it, the more we advocate about it, the more movies, more books, whatever comes out about the corruption, the judges, the attorneys, everybody, all the parties involved, the more it's spoken about, hopefully, eventually we'll have change. Hopefully. Because, like you said before, it's a vicious cycle. It goes down from one generation to the next. And why do our kids, why don't they get into hell? Why don't they get to live a happy, healthy, peaceful life?
Right.
It's not fair. It's not fair. We have to end it. I don't know how old your kids are now, but we still have young kids.
Mm.
Maya has babies. Leah has young kids. I mean, my kids are young adults, but they all deserve to, and people out there who are living through this, our kids deserve good, healthy, happy lives. And the bad people involved, the alienators, the bad stepmothers, they need to pay. And that's my final word.
Yeah, listening to Leah's story, it was almost like, you know, change the face, same story, different faces, just different characters.
Yep.
And it's scary. It's really scary.
It is.
So Mary, Marianne, I'm going to give you the final 5 minutes to say whatever you want to the listeners, whatever you want people to know about you and your book and where they can find you and how they can get support and all that good stuff.
Okay. Well, you can find me on dismantlingfamilycourtcorruption.com. If you want a book, you can go on dismantlingfamilycourtcorruption.com, and it shows you the book, and you hit the red button. It takes you right into Amazon. The book is available on Amazon, Kindle, Apple, Barnes & Noble, and Smashwords. And it's only 160 pages, so it's not as crazy as when I gave it to my publisher, and it was 324 pages, so you can thank her that she whittled it down and made it readable. And she said I was too wordy, but, you know, it was the case was so crazy, it had to be told. And right. Everyone had kept asking me what happened, and it's like, well, this is what happened, and you know, I had to trust God, even though sometimes we were losing our faith, but then we, you know, still pray, you know, and at least we got the kids every other weekend. I mean, because the judge could have ruled that I never see them again. He was very close to doing that. In fact, my kids had said, Mom, could you do another custody hearing after the judge had died? And I thought, well, we got a new judge. Maybe there's hope. And I went to the conciliatory office, and it was granted. We were granted another hearing. So I subpoenaed everybody, even my children, because they wanted to go on the witness stand. They were old enough to handle the witness stand and go on there. That was their decision. And so I was ready to go. We came in with a full entourage, and they pulled this judge out of retirement. He had to be 92. He wanted to take a nap for sure. As soon as he got on the bench, he just started talking to the opposing attorney, who was also in his pocket, I found out. And what they did was they just talked amongst themselves, and I'm standing there, and he just picked up all the paperwork and just walked off the bench, no due process. And I yelled to the judge, I said, Your Honor, my children are being neglected. And that was that. And we just walked out of the courthouse, and wow. I went to pick up my kids that afternoon, and they said, Mom, was there court today? And I said, yeah, there was. Well, Dad said it was canceled. I said, no, we all were there. We were wondering where you were. So they were disappointed, but I had tried my last try, because then they had aged out. They were aging out. I mean, but at least as a pro se, I can say I gave my 112%, and I went after them as they went after me, and I did not give up. And even, you know, the kids that are not speaking to me, I'm still praying over them, and it's in God's hands. And I am praying for the abolishment, and I'm going to work towards the abolishment of CPS and have another type of agency installed instead of, in fact, they should get incentives for reuniting families instead of destroying them.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you. You did a wonderful job tonight. We're out of time, but I want to thank you so much. You brought such a light to this horror, actually, that is happening right before our eyes, and it needs to change. So thank you so much, Marianne Petra, and we will say good night. Please visit NASCA.org, and thank you, and God bless.
Thank you. Can I ask you something?
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was you are forgotten. After all that you've done,
Blog Talk Radio.